This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Health and Living with me, Tee Shao Ik. It's Friday. Finally, it's Friday. And of course, with Friday afternoons at 4 o'clock comes Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist for the Doctor in the House segment. He's not here in the studio with me. He's joining me via Zoom. How are you, George?
I'm really excited. It's the end of the year. It's year time of festivity. Of course, I've been waiting for 2 weeks to be on Zoom with you.
All right. And for our show today, we have joining us Professor Dr. Tan Mo Pin, consultant geriatrician, and Chai Sun Ting, senior research officer from the Malaysian Research Institute on Aging from University Putra, Malaysia, UPM. And we'll be discussing a recent report released by the World Bank titled A Silver Lining, Productive and Inclusive Aging for Malaysia. So we want to just very briefly look at some of the findings and recommendations that were made. And, you know, how do we prepare for the aging society in Malaysia? In this year, 2020, Malaysia is already an aging society. By 2044, we'll be an aged society. And by 2056, a super aged society. George, you'll be part of that. But despite knowing that our population is aging, are we doing enough to address it? So that's what we want to discuss.
And shall we? I was getting quite excited because it's the end of year's festivity. Now you just reminded me that, well, first of all, you painted these doom and gloom pictures of aging person. And now you even mention it, super age. So I'm going to get Maupin to come and help me out here.
Maupin and Sun Ting are going to correct you on that. There's no doom and gloom about aging, is there?
No, there isn't.
Yes.
It's called a silver lining. It's not called a silver lining for nothing.
Yeah. And
I feel slightly happier now.
Do call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'd like to hear if you have any questions or if you have any thoughts about Malaysia becoming an aging population. Do you have any concerns about social protection, for instance, healthcare, financial status of the older persons in Malaysian society? Do call us, WhatsApp or tweet us. So let's look at the idea of an aging population or an aging society. The World Bank report predicts that 14% of our population will be above 65 years old by 2044 and over 20% of that age group by 2056. Is this a good or a bad thing, Professor Tan?
Well, it's a good thing because if by having the privilege of growing old means that we are getting wealthier, our healthcare system are robust. So it's actually all a good thing. So because I think that the issue is how we perceive old age at the moment. So I think George is going to have a hard time today.
Yeah. So how do we perceive old age in our country?
Well, we perceive an old age as a time where you are disabled and need to be looked after. And I think increasingly people see old age as a time when you start spending lots of money on healthcare services. So I think hopefully this report that's provided by the World Bank will put all that right, because we've had the longest time, Chai and I have been for the longest time trying to change people's thinking about growing old. Yeah.
And Sun Ting, would you like to correct that perception or address that perception that George had about, you know, if we talk about an age society, it means it's doom and gloom?
Well, hello, everyone. Well, first and foremost, don't worry so much of all these what we call thresholds. When you wake up from 59 to 60, you are still the same person. Whether there is a 14% older population in this country in whatever year, and don't worry about that. Don't sweat about it. It's still the same country. Nothing will suddenly happen just because we reach 14%, 20%. But it is the process that we should be getting worried about. It's not really about aging per se. But we like to use five words. We say that as a country, we are getting old before we are getting rich. So it's a good problem to be had. You know, some countries do not really enjoy the same increase in life expectancy. But, you know, we all would hope that the country is slightly wealthier before our population is aging so quickly.
Okay, Xing Teng, I am convinced that tomorrow I'm going to wake up and I'm going to convince myself that, no, I am still the same person. Although I aged by one day, I'm now venturing into 52. Nothing doom, nothing gloom about me. But I want to pick up on what Mao Peng was saying about, you know, the perceptions. Number one, she said that a lot of disability when people age. And number two, a lot of expenditure on healthcare. Do we have any figures about what sort of disability do people have, let's say, you know, in a kind of a golden age era? And then, you know, I try to make it politically correct here. I want to, because I'm venturing into that, and I really want to know how much am I saving for myself, and also what sort of disability will I face?
You hit on a very interesting question, and I'm sure Chai has something to say about that. So when we set out to actually look at disability in Malaysia, we found that the tools that have been devised to evaluate disability do not actually help us. Yes, because, you know, we ask questions like, do you do any house? Can you still do any housework? But I don't do housework. Why do I do housework? My daughter-in-law does it. Yeah, so do you go to the bank? Go to the bank. My son does it. So you can't really judge whether they've lost the ability or whether somebody else just took it over because it's an obligation. So until we actually adjust some of this social behavior, we can't actually measure disability accurately. Yeah. So the other side of the coin is that sometimes we have patients admitted who are practically bedbound and need to be fed. And then we'll ask the family members, has she got any issues? Oh, no, she's fine. She can still say hello. So it's actually an expectation that, you know, as long as they can talk, they are fine. They're still, they can remember things from a very long time ago. But actually, they actually need help feeding, and they assume that as a normal part of aging.
So what would be a better or better parameters to measure healthy aging or healthy function in older age then?
I think the tendency here is for us to lump older persons into one homogenous group. You know, anytime you're above 60 or 65, they view you as one group. But in reality, in gerontology, we divide it into third age and fourth age. There's really no significant difference between older adults and what we call young old, those in the threshold of 65 to 74. Frailty does not occur overnight. And if you are frail before, you probably don't need to wait until 60 to be frail. But to say that old age, the onset of diseases, you face multiple problems, even if you are diabetic, it will take years for you to develop to a chronic stage if it's well managed and you'll be a good boy and take your medication. But in this sense, this is where we would like to tell people that, you know, stop looking at aging as the end of everything. It's just the beginning, in fact. I would say that we all say 60 is the new 40. And maybe for mother or for very old people, you know, this is another new spring, another new era for them. This is where I think we have to think about that.
Chai, I love everything you say. You know, I'm the new old, and then 52, my age this year, I'm the new 38. And then also, I feel very young. But I want to pick up on the point of how much is it going to cost me when I carry on aging? So, you know, Mao Peng, you avoided that question. You mentioned that at the end of the day, you know, that perception that it's going to cost a lot of healthcare. Obviously, I'm venturing into my new old now. Am I saving enough? It's another key issues. And you said Chai has got some data. I'm looking forward to that. And you know what? I also think a lot of listeners out there are really looking forward to asking you some questions as well.
All right. So let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will get Professor Tan to answer the question that she alluded you on. How much should you be prepared to spend on healthcare as you grow older? You know, Senting, you said that we shouldn't look at aging as a negative. It's an opportunity. There are silver linings, but we have to be practical and acknowledge that loss of income and perhaps a lack of social security is a big challenge for many older people in Malaysia. So let's come back and look at the issue of money, finances, income, savings, healthcare spending. We are speaking to Professor Dr. Tan Mo Pin, consultant geriatrician, and Chai Sen Ting, senior research officer from the Malaysian Research Institute on Aging from University Putra Malaysia. And of course, my co-host is Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. If you have any questions, call us 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be right back on Health and Living, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik, and my co-host, consultant urologist, Dr. George Lee, for our Friday afternoon Doctor in House segment. Today, we're speaking to consultant geriatrician, Professor Dr. Tan Mo Pin from University of Malaya, as well as Chai Sen Ting, senior research officer from the Malaysian Research Institute on Aging from University Putra, Malaysia. And we are discussing the recent report by the World Bank, which is titled A Silver Lining, Productive and Inclusive Aging for Malaysia. We want to look at some of the recommendations or areas that they have highlighted to address the aging mega trend. Before the break, we were just basically trying to address perceptions about aging and correcting misconceptions, I suppose. Do call us if you have any questions or thoughts you'd like to share on this. You can call us at 03-7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Before we go on to the question that George had posed to Professor Tan about, you know, how much should you save or how much should you expect to spend on healthcare in your older age, I just want to read out WhatsApp comment that was sent in that said, every 6 months you have 100% replacement of our cells and aging is an illusion. So on that, with that as a backdrop, George, you wanted to address this question to Professor Tan.
Yeah, well, because I'm at my new aging, I'm changing every 6 months. So I need to prepare, you know, I'm 52. What do I need to do when I get into my real old?
It really depends whether you want to retire or not. Now, by doctor's track record, you never retire anyway, George. Yeah, so doctors don't retire from what I can see. Yeah, so I don't think you need any savings. Yeah, so the issue we have is the sense that older people are entitled to retirement, and then others review, and then because they're forced to retire, some view retirement as a time of loss because there's a lot of income, there's inadequate savings. So you really need to examine when you want to retire, because when you retire, there's no more income, and then you'll have to have enough savings to then maintain you for the rest of your life. And there are actually calculators that actually look at your expected life expectancy. Yep. And then the other thing that people need to consider is to actually not have savings, because no matter how much you save, if you have a catastrophic illness, your savings is not going to cover it. So we actually have to consider insurance so that we can actually even out the healthcare expenditure in a society, because some people will hardly need anything at all to, you know, in terms of healthcare for throughout life, and others are less fortunate for some reason or other, actually, you know, need a lot of money, more money to actually treat illnesses as they get older. So it's not an easy answer to your question, but actually everyone should have kind of financial advice on how they should actually manage their old age.
Chai, you know, Professor Mo Pin actually answered the question but didn't answer my question. How can you help me?
Well, we have standard answers for these questions, mainly because everyone's pattern of consumption is not really the same. So if you ask any financial planner, you'll all be depending on your current spending habits and patterns. That's where they will always start. And by a rule of thumb, they will always say, since you will not be having any major income in retirement, it will be like one third. You have to actually look back at your spending and see how much, what kind of retirement life that you would like to have. Catastrophic spending in health and all that, that really depends on the healthcare system that, that this country provides. You know, if you are going to go for public health and you're willing to wait for it, I suppose that's not going to be a major issue. But if you want to go for private healthcare services, you better just call them up and say, you know, how much will it cost for me to be doing this procedure? Or how much will a nursing home cost on average every month? I mean, and these are the things that you can do from a financial planning point of view.
But I'm really glad you brought that up, because at the end of the day, many of us know that many insurance, which Maoping alluded to earlier on, tend to not cover you so much whenever you're heading towards certain age. And the other problems which we face is that in an Asian society, we tend to have that reliance on the younger generation to look after the older generations. Do you think we can continue to sustain such lack of coverage from insurance, and also that perception that the younger age group is going to help me? Because I don't think my kid's going to feed me when I'm old.
I'm just wondering how much time we have, but we have a lot of figures. We have a lot of numbers. The first few sets I would like to share with everyone is that people seem to think that, oh, you know, I'm going to retire at 60. How many years left? And they tend to use the average life expectancy. And that's not quite right, because average life expectancy starts at the year zero. So if the average male lifespan is about 72 or 73 and female is about 76, that's not how many years you will have left at the point of retirement. If you are 60 this year, you are not looking at another 15 years, or you're actually looking at 20 years, because you have already survived to the age of 60. So the average life expectancy, or the remaining life expectancy, the term that we use, is roughly about 20 years. I mean, of course, different by gender. So you touch on a very important point, which is on transfers. We call them transfers because money from your children, money from your grandchildren, probably. I don't think it will appear. I mean, not to say in your specific case, but in general terms, we are saying that social transfers, or what we call money from children, is actually reducing in numbers. When we first did our survey in 1999, we have roughly about 60% of our older sample saying that they get some money from their children. But mind you, it's not a lot. It is about like what, average 200-300 a month, which is not really sustainable. Mm. But at least the percentage and the coverage was high. Roughly about 60% of them said they got it. But in recent surveys, the last one in 2016 or 2018, the figure dropped to about 40-45%. So I think it's also a question of cost of living. Probably younger people nowadays, they have more to pay for, and they probably couldn't. They probably think that their parents are fine, or they have house, they have everything, and they have savings, so they don't tend to give as much. But this is also an issue of what kind of social protection system that we have. And this is, I'll pin two words for now so that y'all can continue the discussion. The two words here, that is redistribution and risk pooling. So as Prof has alluded to, insurance is a form of risk pooling. But private market insurance is not the risk pooling we are talking about. So when the government has funds, whether it's in consolidated funds from tax, we have to think about different mechanisms. And we are not doing enough on these two fronts, redistribution and risk pooling.
And, you know, the World Bank's report did already highlight three areas to be addressed: employment, income security. That's two things that we're talking about right now, and aged care, which Prof Tan, you did something you did mention very briefly. But one of their suggestions was to increase, gradually increase the retirement age and the EPF withdrawal age to 65. Prof Tan, what are your thoughts about this?
Yes, I think 65 is actually a very reasonable suggestion. Yeah, because a lot of countries now no longer have a sustainable pension system, even with the retirement age of 65. So the retirement age has now either gone up, or some countries have even abolished retirement age. So yes, it is a very, very gentle suggestion to increase it gradually. And I'm sure when we get there at 65, it will have to be pushed up some more. Yeah. At the moment, what we are finding is that people are being dismissed from their posts at the height of their productivity, and when they're most able to contribute to their organizations. So, I mean, all of us have suffered from losses of, you know, key workers in our places where, you know, it's like suddenly they're retired. Yeah, I mean, and there's no room for extension of those kind of workers, you know, like we had Inche Omri, who managed our lecture theatres, and then suddenly he's gone and I turn up to my lecture and my mic is not working, you know, and Mr. Chow, who, you know, decorated everything before all our events, and suddenly we turn up to events and it's undecorated because Mr. Chow has retired. So it's those kind of very important things that we actually are missing, and society is ripe for that. So retirement, people have this false sense that by the time they're 60, they're very old, so they must retire. But when you reach 60, you realize that actually you're not ready to retire. You're still so fit and you have still so much to give.
Okay. Moping, I cannot ignore the elephant in the room, the COVID, right? Okay, there are two topics I quite like to discuss with you and look at, value your opinion. Number one is that obviously it's very topical that, you know, this encouragement to withdraw your EPF so that you can, spend it now so that you can sustain it. I'm quite keen to ask for your opinion because obviously that's going to have an impact later on in life when you're saving for the whole idea of EPF is actually saving for your, golden days. And the second thing is that you've highlighted something about the older people are being dismissed. Obviously, people are losing their jobs because the economy is stagnating due to the COVID situation. And I think anecdotally, many senior members of the staff probably are dismissed first because they are reaching retirement age and also their pay package is probably bigger. And how do we overcome such challenges when they face with dismissal in that sort of scenario and also being encouraged to eat into their EPF?
Personally, I don't see that the government has any choice. So the EPF is actually meant for retirement, but it's also meant for emergencies. And, you know, we're having a war, so we don't have a choice. Yeah. And what we have to do is to top it back up later. Yeah. So, you know, when you save for emergencies. And what greater emergency there is right now? There's a global emergency. Yeah, so we have to understand the current financial situation globally.
Yes. Chai, is it anecdotal that I think that older member of staff are being dismissed first because it's easier?
We just churned figures for one of the members of the press recently. Actually, there was claims that many young people are laid off from the job loss from the COVID-19 surveys. But actually, if they look carefully into the data, while there is significant job loss in terms of numbers by the younger age groups, the older workers actually had it much worse in terms of percentages. There are normal people who are unemployed in their 50s used to be roughly about 0.1 or 0.2%. But during the COVID season, it became 4% to 5%, which is representative of a 400% jump or 300% jump. And this is where it is often overlooked because we don't really distinguish between numbers and percentages in terms of impact. So definitely I would say older workers are disproportionately affected. But I would like to go back to the question of EPF and whether it is sufficient or whether more could be done. We have to understand this. EPF, we don't have to go very far. We can go back to 2012. When we increased the age of retirement, the minimum age of retirement, we first set a minimum age of retirement at 60. And at that time, there was already huge concerns of public opposition that whether we should also change the withdrawal age of EPF to 60. Now, it's almost 10 years, 8 years down the road. Nobody has been able to do it, to even suggest it is technically suicide. So there's very little political will to do it, despite EPF's tagline was Wang Persaraan Anda, and you are not retiring at 55. You know, the new law already says the minimum retirement age is 60. But of course, I think we have to correct one perception here. You want to retire earlier if you have lots of savings. You can do it anytime. You don't have to wait until 55. You can do it at 50. You can do it at 40. That's fine. But the law is there to protect a minimum retirement age so that it helps people who need to continue working. I think that distinction has to be set. So in general, in many countries, withdrawal age, reemployment age, and retirement age are three separate things. In Singapore, for example, withdrawal age is still 55, but they managed to slip in a ruling of minimum balance. You can't withdraw if you don't meet it. And they managed to convert it into an annuity program. But we are not seeing such reforms in our social protection system. And that is the real cause of concern. The question of leakages or whether we should be withdrawing the COVID-19 funds, that's just an option. I mean, it's your own money. The government is not putting up any extra funds for that.
All right. We'll go for a quick break. And we have Russell on the line who has a question for our experts today. So, Russell, please stay on the line. We'll get back to you after a few short messages and our market update. Today, I'm speaking to consultant urologist Dr. George Lee, consultant geriatrician Professor Dr. Tan Mo Pin, as well as Chai Sun Ting, senior research officer from the Malaysian Research Institute on Aging, University Putra Malaysia. We are discussing the silver economy, our aging population. What are we doing right? What are we doing wrong to address it? What do we need to improve? So call us if you have any questions. 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Good afternoon. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Yi. It's Friday and our Doctor in the House segment is currently on with consultant urologist Dr. George Lee, as well as Professor Dr. Tan Mo Pin, consultant geriatrician, as well as Chai Sun Ting, senior research officer from the Malaysian Research Institute on Aging, University Putra Malaysia. I think you can guess with our experts lineup, you can guess what topic we're discussing today. It's about Malaysia as an aging society and whether we are prepared for it. We have Russell on the line with a question. Good afternoon, Russell.
Good evening. Thank you for having me. Doctors, you have broadly touched on aging, and I'll ask two questions. First question, what age do you start aging? Second question, it's a statement that's always made that you must age gracefully. Mm-hmm. Although you have touched on that, but anyway, I like description of this.
What are your thoughts on aging gracefully? Yes. Thank you so much, Russell.
Thank you.
So, Professor Tan, perhaps at what age do you start aging?
When you're born. I know, start getting depressed now. No, but that's the thing. Life is a trade-off. So, you know, as you get older, there are things that you gain. So it's actually, having a positive attitude is very important. And also working hard, your social responsibility is to maintain your health and to plan ahead. A lot of issues we have is if you, your journey in old age depends really on how you planned and how you behave. So if people find it very pleasant to see you and spend time with you, then they would like to come. So you can, everybody remembers that your favorite auntie who makes the loveliest cookies and you can't wait to see her every year for Chinese New Year. Mm-hmm. And then you also remember that, there's gender stereotypes going on here. You also remember that grumpy uncle whom everyone goes, do we really have to? Yeah, so if you make those two contrasts, you can tell how actually the formula is not difficult, but there are personalities involved and, sometimes old age is associated with bitterness. So, you know, if they have unresolved conflicts or sometimes even untreated illnesses, then it becomes a problem. Mm-hmm. And that's what we really need to do as healthcare professionals to sort that out as well.
All right. And Sun Ting, about aging gracefully.
I'm not a big word for gracefully, but it's fine if you lumber along. I mean, as long as, let's put it this way. I'll share a research by Kahneman and Deaton, and I was recently asked to give a talk on happiness on cities. And, you know, there is a threshold. You were just asking about how much would you need for retirement and whatnot. I mean, that's difficult to estimate because you might have some catastrophic spending. But our research has shown internationally, Gallup polls, up to a certain point, money doesn't make you any happier. And the magic number is $75,000 a year.
Oh.
So that translates to our a household, mind you. So maybe we should come up with a suggestion that says if your household earns above that threshold, you probably doesn't need to contribute the extra money into EPF and you can put it into the stock market instead, you know. But the idea here is this, when you say aging gracefully, it's really about, to us, active aging, productive aging. We have thrown in a lot of concepts over the years, including words like successful aging. But the real reason why we should plan for our old age is because years in retirement, just like years in other stages of human development, you should have a plan. I mean, you should really decide what to make you get out of the bed every day. I think that's the fundamental question.
Mo-Ping, I love all these, you know, icing on the cake, kind of like happy, successful aging and everything. It's making me really happy now. But what is the official definition of aging? When do I really... I know you said from the moment you're born, but again, you're not answering the questions of the listeners. What is the official age of aged in? And then, you know, that falls into statistics, because I understand that there are some figures to show that by 2044, you know, like 14% of Malaysian people will be aged. And then by 2056 or something, like 20%. And also, what significance has it had on the economy and as a country itself? Because I understand most people perceive Japan as an aged nation. And, you know, what sort of implication does that have on Japan?
Japan is a super aged society, and it's the third richest country in the world. So you can age successfully, as Japan has shown. So, but the main issue we have with people's perception of age is actually to actually consider chronological age and to define old as using a cutoff figure. Because everyone ages at different age. If you look at the Oxford English Dictionary, aging is just a process of growing old. And then, but then the scientific definition for aging is actually cellular damage. So how much cellular damage you have had on your body, that's biological aging. So biological aging and chronological aging, actually, that is not a very strong correlation. So there are people who actually live till 100, who actually the cells, the body, is actually the same age as someone who might only be 40 years old. And that's really how stark the difference can be. George, don't cry to yourself. You're all right, George. You're all right.
Policy-wise, in Malaysia, we use 60 to define as an older person. So for some benefits, welfare benefits, they start at 60. Internationally, they use 65. Of course, demographic, for any projections, we can always adjust it in terms of percentages if you use 60 or you use 65. But United Nations and the international bodies alternate between these two figures. It's either 60 or 65 at the moment. But ILO and WHO tend to use 65. I think health, they use 65 a lot more. But for United Nations and other agencies, they do recognize the age of 60 as the cutoff age for older person. And this has been used in the past World Assemblies.
Okay, so 20% by 2056, is that good or bad for us?
It depends. The future is in our hands, because what we're thinking about is productive aging. That's what the Silver Lining Report is all about. So we have a new demographic dividend, in that what we are having is that when people go to, when last time you imagine 60-year-old is very old, because you know, because the healthcare system's not so good, nutrition not so good when they were younger. By 60, their body is spent. But now when people reach retirement age, they're still not ready to retire. They're still very, very productive. So what we really need to do is to bring these young old, if you like to call them, people in the young old category back into productive, into the productive workforce. And that is actually the silver, what we call the silver economy. So silver economy, I think Chai should explain this a bit better than me, but some, it's something like older people should still be able to contribute to the society, but also we should start a new industry when it comes to actually providing for people who potentially needs assistance as they get older.
But how can we hope to have a silver economy or productive population if we have a rising rate of non-communicable diseases, if we are looking at an aged population that is unwell?
That's precisely the issue. So we need to educate people.
I think this is where we have opportunities, not just because of extending productive work years. We call it working ages. If all there are more and more older population, they are also consumers. So the care economy will come up. The new forms of a work and employment will come up. A lot of people seem to think that gig economy is for young people, but it's a perfect market for elderly and new retirees because they won't be constrained by 9-to-5 work arrangements. They will get flexible jobs and tasks. So I think for us, when we talk about the silver economy, we have to broaden our interpretation that don't look at older person just as dependents, but they could be very wealthy consumers. There's a good reason why there are so many new products targeting retirees, retirement villages, what we call gerontourism, holidays for senior citizens. Everybody can fly. I mean, that is really happening until COVID-19 struck. But the real issue here is always how can we leverage on this first dividend? Prof. Maupin was talking about the demographic dividend. The demographic dividend is very simple in its explanation. When you have more young people than old people, a booming growth period, naturally the economy will grow because the number of working ages is just higher than the percentage of non-working people. But this is where the second demographic dividend becomes tricky. If we do not use this surplus carefully, we do not put in place retirement fund systems, and we still continue to think that, oh, this is going to perpetuate indefinitely. We'll always have so many young people. But the truth is, for Malaysia, we have just passed our peak percentage of working population if we use the age 15 to 64, which is roughly about 65-64%. From that point onwards, that working population will start to shrink. And in fact, the absolute number of young people is already dropping. Under 17 population is actually steadily decreasing. We are now roughly about 7.5, 7.6 million. Every year, the number is going to keep falling from this point onwards. So we are still in the first demographic window. But how do we use the surplus? How do we transform this extra surplus and funds into systems, retirement systems, is going to decide whether we will get a second demographic dividend. Are we investing it into education? Are we investing it into healthcare systems? If we don't, then the second demographic dividend would not appear.
And are we? Are we doing all of that, or are we having conversations, you know, that are necessary to plan for that?
I would say that we are very lucky in a way, because when the Brits left us, they didn't want to pay for our pension, so they gave us EPF. So we were right on the right footing right from the beginning. So, but it has created a situation where our Malaysians do not know any better of other systems. We are very familiar with individual accounts. You know, we tend to be fine with it. We seem to think that whatever the money is in EPF is our retirement funds, and that's it. We don't imagine any more anything else, which is unfortunate, because there are many ways we can skin so-called the cat. I always like to use these three questions that we developed recently. Would you like to pay 20% of your salary every month with three different outcomes? The first outcome is you get a lump sum at the age of 55 or 60, whatever age you choose. The second option is you get a pension or annuity instead of a lump sum payment, but it will last you for life. That's the second option. And the third option that many people don't really think about is that you still pay 20% every month of your salary and wages. But at the end of the day, at retirement, everybody gets a pension. Everybody gets a paid pension, maybe less for those who have never worked, like housewives or people in the non-formal sector. But if you have contributed from your own wages when you're in your employment years, you can get a higher pension. We hardly think about it in those terms. I would point out again, we think about it in flat rate. It's either 500 ringgit a month, 1,000 ringgit a month. That's what the Prime Minister has been announcing. They're going to increase the welfare benefits to such and such an amount. But we all know the reality of the situation on the ground. Some people are poor. Some people are marginally poor. Some people are hardcore poor. And yet they are all getting the same benefits. So we don't have enough conversation in terms of thinking about alternatives, thinking about different ways of doing things. That's our real problem.
I'd like to read a message that we got on WhatsApp from Maggie, who says that if we keep to a sensible lifestyle, eat and live without excesses, we would be physically more prepared to face aging. Maggie says that she's 62, but she believes that still being in the workforce and being in touch with what's happening every day has helped a lot in keeping her young. She has been told that she looks like somebody in her late 40s. So well done, Maggie. Thank you for sharing that. So, you know, if we want to look at what's next, and we've had so many conversations about what we need to do now, what we need to be prepared for, you know, and you've talked about the dividends of the demographics. We have, I think we're on the cusp of being able to put all these into place if we have the right conversations. But really, we are facing a global crisis right now, which is threatening to derail a lot of progresses made in many areas as well. So what do we really need to keep our eye on for the next few decades?
I mean, I'd like to say things that this has been, the pandemic has been quite positive in lots of ways, because it suddenly gave us an opportunity to right a lot of wrongs in a very short time. So, you know, Chai and I have been in chat with each other daily. You know, last time didn't talk to each other, right? So, because we had to, we have no choice, because we all have this sense of solidarity that we have to keep our older people well in order to actually win this fight against COVID-19. And so older people have suddenly been thrown into the limelight, because they are the most vulnerable group and they are key in actually winning the fight against COVID-19. So care homes as well, you know, suddenly we have the opportunity to engage care homes. They used to hide away, they don't come to us. Yep. But now we can talk to them and we can teach them things. So actually the care home training, suddenly we couldn't reach them. Now suddenly we are training thousands of care home workers. Yeah. So maybe Chai can tell you a bit more about that.
Yeah, I think absolutely what the COVID-19 does is it exposes some of the fundamental weaknesses in our social protection system. And previous, I wouldn't say unrecognized, but sectors that were not really given much attention are suddenly very, very important. We used to associate, we still do in some degrees, old folks homes or retirement villages or care centers as abandonment, you know, sending your parents to these places is horrible and all that. But we suddenly realized that actually, regardless of whether it is privately run or charity run or whatsoever, this is a form of service. It's a part of the care economy. So perhaps this is where we have an opportunity to correct some misperceptions. That's one. But also actually actively taking steps to fix things in the industry. This is a golden opportunity for us. So like we say, in every crisis, there's always an opportunity. And we are not, if you ask me, we are not really focusing on one particular thing in the coming years. Perhaps the government will have to think about it in a more comprehensive way. But I would say that the World Bank report definitely has helped us highlight some of the key issues and identified correctly the low-hanging fruits as well, which is actually what you can do to protect yourself for old age, which is work a little bit longer. We have many research to show proof that if you stay in the workforce, you can actually have a longer lifespan. But the data is correlational, not causative. But there is evidence that if you stay in the workforce, you have to remain relevant. You pick up new skills to use internet, emails, and WhatsApp and whatnot. So I think at the end of the day, the World Bank report has actually empowered individuals to say that, hey, I can do this. And there are many things that the industry can work on. But the government needs to look at it from a more holistic view on actually in terms of how can we prepare the country in the way forward.
We need to wrap up soon, but I very quickly want to get Prof Tan to address this question that came in from a listener about Casey says their mother is 90 years old, has been complaining of dizzy spells daily for the past 3 years. And Casey just wants to know, what would you advise?
Oh, okay. Yeah, actually, dizziness is a very common problem in older people. And it's not very easy to manage. And you will end up, this is one of these healthcare costs issues where you can end up really burning a hole in your pocket just going through all the tests. So if you possible, please take her to see a geriatrician for an overhaul. And we call it a kind of an engine overhaul, and hopefully ration how much you're going to spend, because the dizziness symptom is actually non-life threatening. But what you really need to do is to rule out anything potentially serious. But the most important thing is to actually teach yourself how to cope with the symptoms.
All right. And not break the bank trying to figure it out. Yep. Mm-hmm. Can I get a final message from each of you? Professor Tan.
Yes. Actually, as Chai said, crisis brings great opportunity, and we are really grateful for this World Bank report in highlighting actually the silver lining and the golden opportunity in bringing in our older people for work, but also highlighting potential needs for us to plan for social care for our older people.
All right. Prof Tan, always, always optimistic. What about you, Santing? A final message from you?
I think people should be expecting more from the healthcare system. They should also be expecting more from their social protection system. So I hope, regardless of our own individual perceptions, there should be more public debate and discussion about the kind of systems that we can have for this country, not just for older people, but for all ages, because young people will have to take care of the seniors, the families. Are we putting in the right policies to actually help families do right by their family members? I think that is really important.
All right. And George?
Well, in the start of the show, I was all very depressed, but now I'm really happy because I learned a few things. I think old is a new young, senior is a new junior. And also, just like Maggie, what she said is the key is be prepared for productive aging. Now I feel like, okay, I'm so upbeat, but so what? It's all in the perception, right?
Thank you so much. I've been speaking to consultant urologist Dr. George Lee, Professor Dr. Tan Mo Pin, consultant geriatrician, and Chai Sen Ting, senior research officer from the Malaysian Research Institute on Aging at University Putra Malaysia, who have all given us a lot to think about when it comes to addressing and welcoming an aging population. You've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.